The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Chapter 7. Tov Shem Mishemen Tov. Better is a good name than a good oil. That's kind of funny. So some explain this to mean anointment. You know, a person is anointed. In those days, oil was a symbol of royalty. You're anointed with oil. And so sure, you have a name because you belong to the X family, but you don't have a name. Better, Tov Shem Mishemen Tov. Better is a name than good oil. And it's a play on the word shemen, because the word shemen also has the word name. And so here, better is a name, that you have a name, and we learned what a name is all about. It's that people can call you, and you can answer. Then you have fine oils that make you just smell good, look good, but ultimately you just have a bad name. V'yom ha-mavet miyom hivaldo. And better is the day of death than the day of birth. Why is the day of death better than the day of birth? Because the day of birth, you don't know what's going to be. You don't know whether this person will succeed, whether they'll not succeed, whether they'll end up with a good name or they'll end up with a bad name. But things are very clear by the end of the life, right? By death day. And we know what's going on. And so, some relate the last part of the verse, and understandably so, to the first part of the verse, that is better a good name, and especially on the day of your death, because now you for sure won't lose it. Right? If a person dies with a good name, then that good name is theirs forever. Okay? But if a person dies with a good oil, big deal. Man, it doesn't mean anything. So they had a position, they had a title, but it didn't really mean anything. Tov lelechet el beit evel. It is better to go to a funeral, milechet el beit mishte, than to go to a party. Now, basically, Shlomo is pretty strong. Solomon is very strong in the way he sees things. And when you think about it, it's quite understandable. What would you rather do? Would you rather go to a party, or would you rather go to a funeral? I think everyone would say they'd rather go party, right? Who would say, yeah, let's go, hey, you know, call up your friends, say, what do you got to do tonight? Nothing. Well, there's this great funeral. You know, something really exciting. Join me for a funeral. But of course, Shlomo is referring in terms of wisdom, in terms of repentance, in terms of getting in touch with ourselves. Yes, it's great to go to a party, but in the end, what are you left with? When a person goes to funeral, I mean, I could only say for myself that some of my most reflective, most moving moments of my life were funerals, okay? Were eulogies. That's when I really got in touch with myself and life and the purpose of life and what should I be doing and how can I be changing. That really moved me. So the party is a really good sedative. You know, you need a tranquilizer. Parties help you forget what you are dealing with, what you should be dealing with, what you might be dealing with. But funerals give you a boom. And it's good to go to a funeral. I mean, there's two things that I always think, you know, if I could stick to a schedule of such. I would think it would be good to go to a funeral at least once a week or once every 2 weeks, you know? And it would be great to go to a birth once a week, because these two moments when life is beginning and life is ending, when the soul is entering into the world, the soul is leaving the world, these are the most moving moments of our lives. I mean, just to spend the day in a maternity ward, it's unbelievable. When you hear that first crying of the baby, It'll send chills down your spine. It just really gets you to realize, my gosh, and here is a whole life before this child. But then again, you say to yourself, well, who knows what this child will find, where this child will be, what will this child do? But in the day of death, the name is good, and on the day of death, it makes a person think. And basically, what I see here is King Solomon is focusing on attitudes. And one of the things that he's really, in a very upfront way, dealing with is pain. And he's going to basically tell us it's better to acknowledge pain than to try and run away from it. It's also better to accept pain than try and figure it out, because you're not going to completely figure it out. And we're going to see this reflected in what he's about to say. So, Tov lelechet el beit evel, it's better to go to a funeral. And this, by the way, this is a halachic question. If I have a choice to go to a funeral or go to a wedding, which should I go to? And the halacha says you go first to a funeral. Okay? Because in a funeral, you will really, you know, you will really come to a deep, you know, moving reevaluation of life. As well as when you go to a funeral, you are doing kindness to the living and doing kindness to the dead. Because by going to the person's funeral, you are accompanying them to their grave, as it says that the highest form of kindness is the kindness you do to a person who's dead. Because that is certainly not a kindness that you really expect anything back from them. Okay? It's called chesed shel emet. It's a kindness that you do that's just totally truth. There could never be here any expectation that this dead person, it might be you'll have expectation of the live person. Well, that's kindness you're doing to those who are mourning, right? You're like, well, hopefully they'll be nice to me when I die or when someone dies, you know, someone dies in my family. But the kindness you do to the dead, you don't really expect this dead person to do you anything, and you're just going because you want to go, right? And so, Tov lechet abed Abel, it's better that you go to the house of a funeral, not only in terms of what you do for yourself, but in terms of the kindness that you do to the deceased. Milechet el meit mishtel, and going to a party. Vasher hu sof kol adam, because this is the end of everybody's life. Party doesn't get you in touch with what is ultimately true and is ultimately going to happen to everybody. Okay? Kol adam v'chai yiten el libo, and the living will look to their hearts. They will take heart to what's going on. So you go to a party, it's a lot of fun, but you really won't take anything to heart from the party. It's like the same question, you know, would you rather go to a comedy or would you rather go to one of these tear-jerking movies? Now it's always really funny because these tear-jerking movies just get a tremendous amount of people coming, and you ask people, well, why would you go to this movie and start to cry? But people recognize that it's those moments of tears that you really get in touch with some very deep feelings, some very deep realizations, and you come to new understandings of yourself. Now he says something really fascinating. Verse 3. Tov kas mischok. Better anger than laughter. Ki bero panim, because with a harsh face, yitav leiv, he will improve his heart, or it will do good to his heart. Now, there's a number of ways of reading this, which is always the beautiful thing about the Torah. Number one, who is this referring to? Whose face, who is angry? Right? It's better, is referring to you. Now, some understand this to be better is God's anger with us than God's laughter with us. Right? Ki bero panim, because when God shows harsh face, which is judgment, the attribute of judgment, yitav lev, right? It will ultimately be good for the heart. It will do good for his heart. Now what is that referring to? In other words, would I rather know the truth? Judge me, let me know where I'm at, or rather you play around with me. Right? I mean, I've had this situation before. Rather than people telling you straight, right? And maybe rather they be angry and tell it to you straight when they're angry, or they pull it off and they pretend they're not angry and they don't show you the harsh face and they're really hiding it, and in the end, it only aggravates them, eats them up, and later on they explode. Okay? And so some see this as referring to people and referring to God. I'd rather, so to speak, God judge me in this world and it be better for me in the next world. And this is a basic idea in Judaism. It's a difficult philosophical idea, but nonetheless, Judaism does say it. That sometimes you'll find a person who is evil and have a good life, and then sometimes you'll have a person who is good and has a very harsh life. And one of the explanations of it, not the total explanation, there is one explanation of it, is that the person who's a tzaddik, who's having a difficult life, they are being paid for whatever sins they've done in this world to leave the eternal world open for eternal reward. But the person who's evil is having a great life, perhaps God is paying them off for their good deeds in this world, right? So that the next world will be left for the eternal punishment. Alright? So the understanding is that I'd rather have the attribute of judgment in my life, set the score straight now, than leave it for later and accumulate Okay? As well as if you're angry with me now and you show me the judgment now, so then I'll do tshuva. Right? So would you prefer a life that's really wonderful, easy going, nothing rocking your boat, and it never really causes you to reflect or to change your life? Or would you rather have judgment in your life and let you know, hey, you know, there are consequences to my actions? This is what they say about the curses about the first man and woman and the snake. Everybody knows that the first man was cursed after the sin, that through the sweat of his brow he will toil. All right. Then the woman, she was cursed with the pain of bearing children. And then the snake was cursed that of the dust of the earth you will eat. Okay? So the Hasidim of Rav Simcha ben Mivshisch, very famous Rebbe, they said to him, you know, Rebbe, this doesn't make any sense. It doesn't seem fair. I mean, we understand the first man, it's going to be hard, toiling. We understand woman, it's going to be difficult. She's the pain of labor, of childbirth. But the snake, what kind of curse is this? That dust you shall eat. It's not a curse. That means that the snake's sustenance will be ready for him wherever and whenever. What kind of curse is that? And Rav Simcha ben Mivshisch answered as such. He said, when man is toiling, right? So it'll be tough, it'll be difficult, and he'll turn his eyes to Hashem, to God, and say, please help me. Right? And when the woman is in labor and it's tough and she starts to feel, my gosh, my life is in your hands, so she turns and she says to God, help me. Okay? And these harsh times will cause a person to reflect and try and change their life, change their ways. But the snake, he's being cursed with the greatest curse you can imagine. It's the curse of tranquility. It's the curse of contentment. That this snake will ever, never have the opportunity to introspect, to think about his life, to change his ways, to seek God. And there could be no greater curse than that. And so therefore, Tovkas, I'd rather the anger of God. Because with the anger of God, I will change my ways, I will reflect. But if God is, so to speak, playing around with me and being nice to me and not telling me straight, and this is what it says about Rosh Hashanah, we once learned it. It says, happy are those who know the secret of Trua. They know the secret of the blasting of the shofar. So the Zohar says, what? Do the non-Jews not know the secret of the blasting of the shofar? What's so difficult about blasting a shofar? Anybody could pick up a shofar and blow it, right? So what's the secret of the shofar? So we are told the secret of the shofar is that when we blast the shofar, God, so to speak, gets up from his throne, from the seat of judgment, and takes the seat of compassion. Why does God do that? So Rav Dessler explains as such. What does it mean to blast the shofar? It's a difficult concept. I'm not going to get into the full understanding of it. But we are told that when we blast the shofar, the prosecuting force, the Satan, so to speak, is confused. Right? Freaks him out. Doesn't know what to do. Right? And God sits, gets, moves from his throne of judgment and takes the seat of compassion. So what's the secret? So Rav Dessler says it's such. Have you ever seen a person on trial and they motion to the court to begin the judgment? Have you ever seen a guy say, okay, walks into the court, where's the judge? Where's the jury? What's going on right here? Come on out, let's get going. I want to be judged. I mean, how many people say, I want to be judged? You would think they'd say, you know, they came late, they try to push the judgment off. Okay? Who wants to be judged? Happy are those who know the secret of the trua. The secret of the trua are the people who say, I want to be judged. And they say to God, God, I'd rather know the truth. I'd rather know where it's at. I'd rather know the score now so I can do something about it. Okay? So I can change my way, so I can reflect. And so this is why God then gets off of his seat of judgment and it takes the throne of compassion. Because if you understand that, you won't need to be judged. Right? The only reason we need to be judged is because judgment moves us to change. Right? But if I'm so ready for change, I'm so excited, I'm ready for judgment, so then the judgment will be turned into compassion. What makes pain into suffering? Running away from it. And that's a big difference. There's a big difference between pain and suffering. Pain, we're always going to live with. Suffering, you don't have to live with suffering. Because suffering is the inability to acknowledge the pain, to let the pain work. It's like when, you know, Lamaze teaches you, every contraction you have, every pain you have, accept it. Let it work on you. Let it open you up. Okay, it's like there was a friend of mine in yeshiva and he was learning this technique of massage or therapy called Ralphing. I didn't know what it was. He said, would you mind if I use you as my guinea pig to practice on? So he told me it was some method of massage or relaxation. And I said, well, sure, I don't mind trying. And then he'd take his thumb and go, right into my side. And it was so painful. And he says, no, that's only because you're not accepting it. you're not just open up, relax. It's true. You know, the more you fight it, the more painful it becomes. Okay? The more you accept it, it goes through you, it moves through you, it changes you, it transforms you. And so, you know, this is the wisdom of Shlomo. Who would understand that it's better to go to a funeral than go to a party? Only Shlomo, only those people who really have wisdom know that you'll get more out of the funeral than you'll get out of the party. The party will leave you with a very short, heightened experience of, you know, whatever. I mean, I remember I used to go to rock concerts quite often. This is before I was a rabbi. Now, I go to rock concerts only once every week. Not just joking. So, you know, I used to go to rock concerts. So there was something that happened at these rock concerts. There's no doubt. There was something quite revealing. There was something quite exciting. But I remember that after the rock concert, I feel more down than before I went into the rock concert. During the rock concert, you get really up and you feel, you know, give me the beat, boy, and free my soul. I want to get off on your rock and roll. And so you're like, you're feeling, wow, I'm up. But when you're finished with the off, you end with, you know, at the end of the concert, what are you ending with? So a party certainly is great for the moment, but it doesn't really leave you with anything long-lasting. But a funeral, you know, some of the best funerals I remember, because they really, I came to grips with the meaning of life, the truth of life, the reality of life. You know, this is real. You want to do something. And so too, better anger. I'd rather you be straight with me and angry than just kind of cover it up, be nice, play it through, and not deal with it. Not deal with it. And this is one of the gifts that my wife and I were given for our wedding. It was 2 days after our wedding. We met a stranger on the street. Don't know who this man is. He comes up and says, oh, mazel tov, mazel tov. You know, I'm sorry I couldn't make it to your wedding. I didn't know who he was, so I wasn't so sorry. I figured he was maybe a friend of my father-in-law. I had no idea who this man was. And so he says, but even though I didn't come to your wedding, I want to give you a present. Well, okay, fine. I don't care who you are. It's fine. I'll give you a present. So he says, let me give you a present. He says, a piece of advice. Ah, okay. He said, never, ever go to sleep, right, without an argument worked out. Right. That, and so we were just married 2 days. Who would ever think that you'd ever argue? You know what I mean? Everybody's so starstruck and everyone's so dreamy-eyed that they think that, oh, you know, would we ever have an argue? Would anything ever anger any of us towards each other? You know, and we thought that was so ridiculous that he should say. We also thought it was not appropriate to be so sober at a time like this when it's our first week in our first week of marriage to tell us, don't go to sleep, right, on an argument. You've got to work it out before you go to sleep. And he was right. Right? It's probably one of the most important things that we ever learned. You never let it go far. You know, you get it out now. Now, you know, some people take it to extreme. I have a friend, and was at their home for Shabbos, and I couldn't believe how much they would scream at each other in front of guests. Right? And he said, what did you do that for? She said, well, and then I asked him, I said, you know, why do you do that? He said, because in our house, the rule is you get it out immediately and it doesn't linger. And they've got a wonderful marriage. So we might look at these people screaming at each other, but the truth is they've got a tremendous marriage because they never let it go past the moment. They don't start eating up and dreaming about it and thinking of what they're going to say and what will I say and what will I say and then what will they say, what will they feel, what will I feel, what will I feel, and then they... You just get it out now. So, tov kas mischok. You know, why? It's better anger, mischok, than laughter, ki barol panim, because with the harshness or the anger of the face, yitev lev. right? The heart will be improved, right? And so rather putting on a face and doing nothing for your heart or their heart, get it out. And so too, not only in terms of man towards man, but this is also referring to towards God and man, and therefore a person doesn't want to go to a funeral because they feel the angry face of God. They feel the harshness of din. But Shlomo is telling us it's better that angry face and getting in touch with ourselves and improving our hearts than to think everything's wonderful and beautiful and sweet and there's no harshness in the world and running away from it. Life is not, you know, I was about to say life is not a Disney film, but even Disney films are becoming, Walt Disney's even becoming pretty harsh these days. Anyways, my kids are frightened to see Walt Disney movies, right? And when I was a kid, Walt Disney was, you know, Mickey Mouse. But nowadays, Walt Disney is like... And we went to Disneyland. So the first thing we went into was the pirates, the Caribbean pirates. My kids were screaming, "Why are you doing this to us? Why are you doing this to us?" So I told them this verse, "Tov kasmi skoki." You know, I mean, who would understand? Why would you go to Disneyland and have these mean, evil things, you know? And so, but the kas, the anger, gets it out and changes our hearts. Leiv chachamim bebeit evel. You know, the heart of the wise stays in the house of the mourner. You don't just simply visit it when the opportunity comes, but you keep your heart there. V'leiv's ksilim, but the heart of the fools, bebeit mishimcha. The heart of the fool is always dreaming about, thinking about, you know, this party, that party, this disco, that movie. But the wise, they think about funerals. Right? The wise, they think about funerals. And so a person would think, my gosh, the wise probably will be a pretty depressed person. I bet you they're now. I think they're really happy because they're in touch with reality and they'll take advantage of this moment because they know that this moment could be fleeting and no one knows, as they say, and we learn. They asked their Rebbe, "When should we do tshuva?" And he said, "Do tshuva the day before you die." And they said, "Well, how will we know the day before we die?" He said, "Precisely, therefore you'll do tshuva every single day." Right? And so, rather than being the kind of people that run away from death, right, accept it, be aware of it, and it will move you. It will move you. And so they say a story about a Hasidic story. A Rebbe was on his deathbed, and his wife began to cry. And he looked at her with a face of such tranquility, said, "Why are you crying? My whole life has been in preparation for this moment. Right? This is what I've been working on. I mean, what do you think was going to happen to anybody? Why are we surprised with this?" But death is a big surprise because we are masters of trying to forget it. Masters of trying to forget it. And I know in Miami Beach, you know, they call Miami Beach God's waiting room. You know? And it's like, why would you go to Miami Beach where you see all these old people moving around slowly? And so I was visiting with this woman, and she was telling me how, you know, I said, "Why?" She said, "And I never go out." I said, why don't you go out?" She says, "Oh, you know, here, my age, a guy could hit you, someone could rob you, mug you." I said, "Oh, so I never go out." So she's in Miami in a room, in this apartment that she owns. Right? I said, "Well, what about friends?" She said, "Oh, I never call friends." I said, "Why don't you call friends?" It's because every time I call a friend, I hear about another friend who dies. And another person who dies. So I don't want to call friends because I don't want to hear about other friends dying. So I said, "Oh." So I said, "Well, why do you come to Miami?" She's like, "I come here every year." You know, I was like, this is what I've been doing for so many years. So I don't... But like, people are denying death. So they don't want to call someone because they don't want to hear about someone dying. But that's it. That's the facts of life. Death is a fact of life. And so we can look at death as either a gift or as a terrible thing. Right? If I run away from death, then death is just terrible. It's just... But if I'm able to live with death, and that's what you have to learn to do, to live with death. When you live with death, you'll be alive every moment of your life. But when you're consistently trying to run away from death, running away from death consciousness, right, then you're running away from one of the most potent messages that God gave us to remind us about the meaning of life, the value of life. And so, Leiv Chachamim Bebeit Evel, they think about funerals. You know, they think about funerals. But the hearts of the fools are trying to run away from the inevitable, which is death. But rather than looking at it as something inevitable, right, that's going to happen, look at it something very rewarding, something very positive, something that keeps me on target, something that reminds me of the value of the moment. Tov lishmoa, by the way, I had a friend who came over to my house and asked me if I would witness him signing his will. I've never witnessed anybody and said, do you mind reading this? Anyway, he's an older man. And it was, I tell you, my whole day was changed because he was signing his will. And then he told me, he says, you know what? I just bought my plot. Yeah, I got a great spot on Mount Olives. Right? And I said, what are you talking about? And he's talking about his will and how he just got this plot and he's really excited about the place he got. He's just next to someone's. He was really happy about it. And then he said to me that the Gemara says that a person who buys their plot will have a long life. Right? Because a person who runs away from death will probably have a pretty quick death. A person who sees death as part of life, it's the most natural thing. There's nothing more natural than dying. Okay? And so then they'll live a much more tranquil life. They won't do crazy things because they're running so much away from death. And so this person is indeed a happy person. I can imagine, you know, the security to know that this is where I will lie. This is where I will die. And know and be accepted and be ready to know, ready to go, whenever the time is right. Tov lishmo garat chacham. Here's another uncomfortable thing that Shlomo says that most people wouldn't think. It's better to hear the rebuke of the wise, me'ish shomea shir ksilim, than to hear the song of fools. Okay? So this is the same thing. You know, would I rather go to a rock concert with some fool up there singing some absolutely ridiculous stuff that has no meaning, or would I rather go to a class like this with some rabbi who's saying things that really drive me nuts? Okay? I think most people would still rather go to, you know, the song of fools. But the song of fools, again, is a sedative. A song of fools is a tranquilizer. A song of fools gets me through this moment, but doesn't give me anything to deal with the next moment, unless I go back to the song of fools and continually keep the song of fools in my head. But Tov lishmo garat chacham, but I'd rather hear the rebuke of the wise. Let the rabbis tell me off. But again, who likes to be told off? We run away from rebuke. And yet, Shlomo is saying, if you want life, then run into rebuke and be ready to hear it so that every opportunity you can get to change and not to continue to live the life of illusion is far better than trying to run away from the life of illusion or pretend. Yes?
You think Song of Fools is referring to praise?
Yeah. Also, yes. In other words, you know, you can have one fool tell you, you're this, you're that, you're this, you're that. And then you have another person who tells you off. So you say, well, I'd rather have the friend who's always telling me how wonderful I am, how sweet I am, how great I am, how this and that. That person, I won't grow. And they do say a story, I forget the name, about a Rav whose Chavrusa died. And he made a new Chavrusa. And when he had this new Chavrusa, they were sitting there learning part, they're sitting over the Gemara studying. And this Rav came up with a question and offered a resolution to the question. And so his chavrusa said, oh, that makes a lot of sense. That's a great answer. So the guy looked and said, what kind of chavrusa are you? I don't need a chavrusa that tells me it's a great answer, right? But my last chavrusa, whenever I come up with an answer, he'd give me 100 questions on my answer. Now that's a chavrusa. You don't want someone that you learn with that tells you that's great. You don't want a relation with a person who tells you, oh, you're wonderful, you're great, never challenges you. And this I've noticed, you know, in the shidduch scene, in the matchmaking market, my gosh, you know, that you'll get these guys who are looking for a girl or a woman who is just basically going to say, you're wonderful, you're great, they laugh at all your jokes. You know, that's what they're looking for. They don't want a woman with strength. They don't want a woman with vision. They don't want a woman who can tell them, this is where it's at. And I'm sorry, you're wrong. Who wants that? But Tov lishmo garat chacham. It's better that you hear the rebuke of the wise than the song of the fool. Ki kekol hasirim tachat hasir, right? Just as the thistles and thorns, the sounds of a pot, So too is the laughter of the fool, and this is futile. In other words, this is like the song of the fool is like the sound inside a pot. You know, it's boiling, it's making a lot of noise, but it's nothing in there. It's just air, it's just vapors. Right? It doesn't have substance. And so again, what do you want? Do you want quality, or do you just simply want to elude yourself? Do you want the depth, or do you want the superficiality? Ki ha'oshek yeholel chacham, v'yabed et lev matana. Now, there's different ways of how to translate this. Ha'oshek could be translated as the provocativeness of the fool, right? Can disarm the wise and destroy his understanding. In other words, by having fools around you, not only are they going to, you know, hanging around fools is not only not productive, because they're just fooling around, and they're not telling you straight, and you're living an illusion, but they also disarm you of your wisdom. Okay? In other words, by not practicing to be clear, to be wise, to be real, you lose your sensitivity to be clear, wise, and real. Okay? So by having the fool praise you, okay, not only damages you in the moment because you don't know what's right now, but you lose your sensitivity. And that's one way of reading it. Another way of reading it is that he's going off to a certain, somewhat of a new topic, which is that oppression, because Oshek also means oppression, oppression disarms the wise, and he loses his heart of understanding, or his patient heart. Now, Shlomo seems to be turning towards how to deal with pain. He first tells us that acknowledge pain. Don't run away from pain. Okay? Acknowledge it. Don't run away from pain. Because if you don't run away from pain, it's going to move you. It's going to change you. Okay? And they say a story about a woman. She's waiting in a doctor's office, and the door happened to go open, and she saw this doctor, right, putting needles in the bottom of the foot of a little boy, right? And the boy was screaming in pain, and the mother was sitting there with such a smile of such joy. And the woman outside in the waiting room was going nuts. She, oh my gosh, what a sick place this is, what a sick doctor, what a crazy lady this is. And so she couldn't take it anymore. And as the woman walked out, she says, how could you do that? What is going on over here? And she said, wasn't it wonderful? Wasn't it wonderful? She said, what's wonderful? She said, my son has been going to therapy for years. This is the first time he's ever felt any pain in his feet because his feet were numb, right? And so we look at things, but the pain from the perspective of others is just terrible. But maybe it's exactly what I need right now. Maybe I'm feeling something. You know, maybe it's awakening something really deep inside me that the laughter would not have awakened inside me. And therefore, ha'oshek, the oppression, right, that I'm going through might cause the chacham to be disarmed and lose an understanding heart. But I warn you, he says, tov acharit davar merishito. Better is the end of something than the beginning of something. In other words, you're only at the beginning of this, so you don't know what this might bring. Right? And we already learned the metaphor of the fool who walks down the street, doesn't know anything about tailoring, anything about garments, and he sees the tailor take a cloth that is beautiful and whole, and he starts to cut it up into pieces. So from the fool's point of view, right, this is terrible, this is disgusting, it's destructive. But the next day he sees that the garment is full. He sees that out, he sees this, you know, this beautiful tailored creation, you know, with Pierre Cardin written on it. And so he goes and he says, wow, how much is that suit in the window? Okay? And the tailor says, you remember yesterday when you looked at me and thought I was crazy, right? And were sure that what I was doing was destructive, was in fact creative. You only know that from the end. And so we have to be patient. And that's also the word matana. Lamtin could be patient. Have a patient heart. Because when a person is going through pain, they might react very quickly and try and run away from the pain, deny the pain, rather than accept the pain, let the pain move to deeper areas, right? And see each part of the pain as something that might be opening up. And that's what my friend kept saying when he was Ralphing me. He was saying, feel the pain, open up, let it go in. But it's true, right? You just don't have to submit yourself to that. That's why I wouldn't suggest that. But it's true. It opens up new areas. And sometimes we realize things that only pain helped us realize. And maybe through joy we could realize it, but it seems that many people... pain seems to go deeper. But through that pain, we could come to whole new levels of ecstasy and joy. First of all, I don't think he's opting for this or that. He's just saying, between the two, better this than that. He will point out moderation is the best thing, as he's soon going towards. However, when a person is going through pain, it might disarm the wise, it might lose the patient heart. But better is the end of something than the beginning. And here the Midrash says what we just learned, that it could be that a person has a difficult life in this world because it prepares them for a tranquil life of the next world, where a person in this world might have just such an easy, wonderful life, but that's some of the payoff in this world for not such a great next world. And so better the end than the beginning, erech ruach, better to have a long-lasting spirit, mikvah ruach, than a puff of ruach or haughtiness. In other words, patience. And boy, is that a tough attribute for us all. Be patient before you judge the situation, before you decide that this is what this means. And I know a lot of people, this is common, everyone asks, what is God trying to tell me? What is God trying to tell me? I don't know what God is trying to tell me. Okay? And therefore, I might just have to be patient. But that's what God's trying to tell me. Therefore, I have to do this. That's what it means. No. You might not get the message until the very end. And so you just have to be patient. Okay? Al tibahel baruchacha. Don't be hasty with your spirit, lichos. That to get angry. Okay, you're going through pain, and so you start to say, why is this happening to me? This is not fair. Okay, that's what makes it even more painful. As I'm sitting around asking myself, why am I going through this pain? This is not fair. This is not fair. This is not fair. Well, what's the difference? You're going through it anyways. Whether it's fair or not, right now is not going to solve it. It's not a question of whether it's fair or not. It's this is what I'm going through. This is my reality. Where do I go with this? What do I do with this? Right, but a lot of people spend so much time fetching about the pain rather than recognizing, listen, I'm going through pain. Okay, I'm going through pain, and don't be hasty with your spirit to be angry, because then you become bitter. Okay, you become bitter, and it just stays with you. It just stays with you. And I was thinking in Miami, I met this woman. An old woman in this condominiums where all these old people live. It's a very sad place. But it's something that moves you, right? I'd rather go there, right? So I was speaking to this one old woman, and I said, how long have you lived in Miami? So she said, 25 years. Right? I said, oh, that's nice. And she says, no, it's terrible. I've had 25 terrible years. Mexico or something. The 1 year I lived in Mexico was the best year of my life, and it's always been terrible. And she's like, okay, fine. And she instead of forgetting it or going on, she doesn't let go of the pain and continues to be embittered by the pain. Okay? And so I'm adding to my pain by being angry about my pain. You right? Don't be too hasty to be anger. Because anger is in the bosom of the fools. Right? This is not going to get you anywhere. Anger towards somebody else, in terms of, they did something, so it seems one way of understanding the verse is release that anger. Be careful. But if you have that anger and you're not expressing it, and you're just holding it in, right, and pretending that everything's wonderful and sweet, it only gets you in the end. I think there's many marriages that have fallen apart because people did not express it and get it out now. Right? You get it out now and you finish with it. But over here, in terms of anger towards God in the situation, kikas bechek silim yanuach, that the anger, right? Tov achrit devar, you'll have to just be patient until the end. And that's very hard. Right. You try to overcompensate by trying to hide it. It's like when you meet old people who are trying to look young. Right? And you just see how many facelifts they had, they wear clothing that's just inappropriate, and you're not being real with yourself. So he's saying, don't be hasty with your spirit to be angry. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean that you don't be angry, you know, but don't be hasty. Don't be hasty. Because in the bosom of the fools is where anger will rest. Al tomar, don't say, ma haya shayamim arishonim hayu tovim. Oh, how it was that the earlier days were good. And this is what people do. They dwell on the past. They say, why is this happening to me? They're really angry. Oh, the way things used to be, the way things used to be. That's not the way things are now. And so it seems to me that Shlomo is really very much focusing us on reality here, now, with an understanding of the future, but not dwelling and regurgitating and you know, the past and all over. And you're angry, and you say, but in those days when I was in Mexico, then that 1 year was better than 25 years. And because she's still remembering, right, the Mexico, she's not doing anything with what she could have done right now, with the situation right now. And so who knows? You know, I taught a class in Miami where the tornado hit. And we did the class in the home where the tornado hit, the hurricane hit the most. Right? It was real. I mean, the area was just, we were going through it at night, but you could see at night, no trees, it was desolate. It was, you know, people would point, that's where my friend's house was. You just see an empty lot. And so we went into someone's house who they were very lucky that their house at least stayed there. But you could see the inside of the house was torn up. And they said, listen, Rabbi, you know, welcome to our home. This is called hurricane carpeting. This is called hurricane interior decorating. And the house was in a shambles inside. Anyways, so I said, who knows when you think about it? You know, who am I to console you? So, you know, I don't know how I'd react. Inheritance is experience. And the person who sees the sun, they see things clearly, but they have no experience. So maybe what he's saying is better wisdom with experience than those who see the sun. You can have a person who's so brilliant, he sees it, but he has no experience. And so therefore he's not talking from experience. If you're having problems with your marriage, then talk to a person who had problems with their marriage. Right? So you have a person, they got PhDs, you know, they can tell you everything about marriage. They've never had a problem with marriage. So how can they really share with you that struggle? Right? The best therapist is the therapist who they themselves ran through therapy. Right? The best rabbis are the rabbis who they themselves went through doubt. Because they can feel other people's doubt. Right? And the fact that they can say, hey, I have doubts, hey, I have troubles, hey, that helps people. And I think I want to mention to you, probably one of the most impactful experiences I had with a rabbi was a Lubavitch rabbi in Toronto. And we were 18 and we were learning about Judaism. And we were having one of those Ask the Rabbi sessions. You know, these rabbis have all the questions, all the answers. We have all the questions, they have all the answers. And so we asked the rabbi the general question, Rabbi, how do you explain the Holocaust? And his eyes welled up with tears. He put his head down and he says, do you think I understand the Holocaust? Do you think the Holocaust doesn't bother me and challenge my faith each day? But I have to go on. I don't understand. And that was his answer. And that was the best answer I ever heard from anybody. Right? He was honest. And he shared with us his own doubts, his own struggles of faith. And then I realized, hey, I could be a person of faith too, because a person of faith is a person who's real and has their ups and downs too. Verse 12, Ki betzel chachma, betzel kesef. Now this is very interesting. And some see it in kind of metaphorical terms, but in simple sense, in the shadow of wisdom, or under the protective shadow of wisdom, is money, is the shadow of money. In other words, through wisdom, one will be able to be protective with money. Because in other words, if a person has a lot of money, they think, oh, I've got security. But if you have no wisdom, you are in a terrible state of insecurity. What good will your money do when you don't know what to do with it? Okay, so b'tzela chachma b'tzela kesef. If you're in the shadow, and you're under the protective shadow of wisdom, then you'll be under the shadow or the secure shadow of money. V'yitaron dat, and there's an even greater benefit to wisdom over money, is that dat chachma tichyeh ba'aleh, because through wisdom you will live. Money will not guarantee you life. Okay? Wisdom will guarantee you life. Now, what's the most precious thing you have? Life. There's nothing more precious than life. Okay? And so whatever you need, what you need is that which will take care of your life. So people think, ah, if I had money, ah, then I'll have a good life. Money doesn't give you good life. Wisdom gives you good life. Okay? And wisdom will give you money and good life. But if you end up without money, you're still with wisdom. It will give life to he who owns, right? He who owns the wisdom. V'itron dat chachma tichyeh ba'aleh. And the advantage of wisdom is through it, the owner will live. And that's the question: do you want money or wisdom? What would you prefer? Okay, what would you prefer? And it's very strong. King, you know, my wife mentioned to me yesterday, the wisdom is a wisdom that goes on forever. You have to understand, Solomon wrote these words thousands of years ago, over 2,000 years ago. King Solomon wrote these words. And it's as applicable then, today, as it was then. And that's wisdom. You know, that's really, that's the eternity of what he's saying, because it doesn't go old. It doesn't fade out. It's not a fad. You know, this year it's in to do this. Next year it's not in to do this. This year that everyone's telling you, you know, don't eat this. Next year they're saying, oh, you should actually eat this. You know, you don't know what who to rely on anymore. I met this guy who's some expert in health. So he starts telling me all these things about how it's good to eat meat, and he starts telling me all these things. Well, gee, I was reading these other books. Oh, these guys in, you know, in macrobiotics, and they say it's terrible to do this, it's terrible. No, it's not true. It's good to do this. Findings, new findings, isn't that, that? You don't know who to trust. But when you read King Solomon, realize that this was written over 2,000 years ago, and it speaks to us like, you know, it's so contemporary, it's so actual. This is why I just love the study of Torah. Because you know the study of Torah will never get old. Right? You know the study of Torah is the most actual. Anyways, he says, Re'et ma'aseh Elohim, behold the works of God. Ki mi yuchol etaken et asher ivto. Who can really fix that which he made crooked? Now I think perhaps Solomon is continuing along the path of how to deal with the pain. Right? In other words, you don't say to yourself, why is this happening to you? Why is it? And being angered by it. Know that in the end, it's all for the best. However, behold the act of God. Because who, if not God, can fix the crooked? Okay? And so this is just see it as a therapy. It's something I have to go through because it's going to help me fix the crooked. Alright?
What is it?
What is it? What is it? Fix it? Crooked? Whatever sin, whatever transgression that I might have done. In other words, I'm saying to myself, oh, who am I? Why am I going through this? You know, this is not fair. Oh, if only, what happened in the good old days? Oh, I remember the good old days. And his teaching is, accept the pain and don't judge it. Don't try and evaluate it. Don't try and figure it out, right? Just accept the pain and realize, who knows better than God? If this is what I need to set it straight, so I accept it. I accept. And of course you have to be careful, which he's going to get to, because then a person could become, you know, not do anything about their situation. And that's not what he's saying. That's not what he's saying. But don't try and figure out the pain or run away from the pain. There's a big difference between trying to deal with the pain and running away from the pain. Okay, there's a major difference. Dealing with the pain is not by running off to discotheques. Dealing with the pain is not by taking drugs. Right, dealing with the pain is doing tshuva, seeing a doctor, maybe having to go through therapy. Okay, fine, that's not running away from the pain. Right? But just being angry, right? And dreaming of the past and denying what's going on right now.
is not the answer. Behold the act of God. This is an act of God. And this is the attitude of the man of faith. This is an act of God, and God knows what I need. And this is a fixing. Right? And it helps people. It helps people. I know a relative of mine, terrible things happened to her. You know, her son was in the army, and someone threw a hand grenade, and it was by mistake. It was a real hand grenade. They thought it was one of these fakes. And so he jumped on it to save the whole platoon. He died. And numerous tragic things happened to her, and she became religious. So someone asked her, how, after such tragedies, do you become religious? She said, because if there is no God, then why not run? Why not throw myself out the window? It's only in the belief that there is meaning to this that enables me to go on with this. Right? So people think an answer to the Holocaust is, well, I can't accept the Holocaust, so I won't believe in God. Not believing in God makes it even worse. Then the Holocaust is truly devastating. Then the Holocaust is truly meaningless. And then what can I do? And so the answer to the Holocaust is not to get rid of faith, because lack of faith only makes the Holocaust even more absurd, even more tragic. And therefore, there's a story that I believe it's Rav Eliezer Berkowitz. He says, you know, two people died in the gas chamber. One, he turns to God and says, God, I tried my best. I believed in you, and I just can't deal with it anymore. I don't believe. And he dies saying, there's no God. The other one says, God, I don't understand your ways. I don't know why you're putting us through this, and what did we do wrong, but I understand that you are just, and I'm sure it's all for the best, and what do I know, what do I understand? And he dies with a shema on his lips. And so, Eliezer Berkowitz said, now let's think of a scenario. Here we are, you know, 50 years later. What would these two people say to us? What would these two people say to us? You know, here I am saying, oh, I don't believe in God. How can there be a God after 6 million Jews died? So, the one who in the gas chamber died with the shema on his lips, he will say, what are you talking about? I went through so much torture and I still believed in God. And you don't believe in God? But the question is, what will the person who gave up his faith, what will he say? And he said, and this is what I think he will say. He will say, I went through so much torture, such tragedies. Don't you think I wanted to believe? I just couldn't. You don't have that kind of challenge, right? You should believe. If I could have, I would have wanted to believe. And that's the crazy thing that people don't understand. It's good to believe, right? Faith helps a person deal with this thing. But she said, if I gave up faith, right? If there isn't a God, then truly all this is for naught. And therefore, it's only my faith that lets me go on with this, with the anticipation that God willing someday I'll understand this. It's tough, it's tough. B'yom tova, on a good day, haya b'tov, be in a good mood. You know, when it's a good day, then b'tov, being good, be in a good state. U'b'yom ra, and on a bad day, re'e, reflect, see. All right. On a bad day, use it for an opportunity to reflect. V'gam etzelu matzeh asa Elohim. And God set this up to that. Right? Al divrat, in order shelo yimtza adam acharav mu'uma. So that a person won't end up with anything at the end. Now what does that mean? Again, based on this philosophy that why am I going through this? Because Hashem is letting me pay now, right, than having to pay later. Well, in terms of retribution, in terms of punishment, in terms of consequences. So it's better that I pay the consequences in the world of the temporal than have it saved to be paid, so to speak, in the world of the eternal. And so that's the attitude that he's telling us that we should take. That on a good day, be good. And when it's a bad day, use it for a time of reflection rather than a time of anger and it's not fair and dreaming about the good day. Oh, but I remember the good day. Right? As I try to escape from A, it's a bad day, and therefore use this day for reflection, right? And recognize that God set this against that, which means that there is justice in the world. God set this against that, so that I wouldn't be left with any, you know, outstanding debts at the end of my life. So good. You know, good. This person that had these problems that his dishes are always breaking. Okay, his dishes are always breaking. Everything's breaking in the house. You know, pick it up, breaks. So he goes to his Rebbe, he says, Rebbe, you know, I don't understand it. Things are always breaking in our house. You know, the dish breaks and the fridge breaks. So he says, you want me to bless you that these things don't happen? He says, yes, I bless you that nothing breaks in your house. Well, 2 days later, his business falls apart. Alright, so he goes to the Rebbe, he says, I don't believe it. You know, I was having this great business, but my dishes were breaking. Right? Now that you told me my dishes shouldn't be breaking, my business is breaking. So he said, well, you choose what you wanted to have broken, but I mean, something had to be broken. And this is, you know, in the Sephardic community especially, they have this notion of kapara. You know, when something breaks, kapara! It's a good attitude, you know, instead of getting, oh, my vase, you say, ah, I'm glad the vase broke because it saved me from probably something worse that might have broken in my life. And so who knows, you know, who knows what's better? We can't decide. You know, maybe this is the best scenario and it could have gotten worse and I should be thankful for it. And to realize, and this is the faith of a human being, this is our faith, that we believe that it's for the best and that God has set things up. There really is consequences, there really is justice, it is fair, but I don't see it and it's hard. I don't think Shlomo is saying it's not hard, but nonetheless, this is what we believe. Well, look, there's an idea in Judaism called consequences. When a person does something, there are consequences to it. There is a notion called reward and punishment in Judaism. It's an idea that people don't so much like these days. But, you know, there are consequences to our actions. And the question is, you know, what would be better, right? That I pay the consequences for my transgressions in this world, right? Or that I say, or I get paid off in this world for my, you know, good deeds, and I get left with the bad deeds for the next world, which is a much more eternal world. That's, I know it sounds very simplistic, and sometimes it is simplistic, and sometimes it's very deep. But if you want an answer to it, I have to give a whole class on reward and punishment. Just that I can't. This is not, you know, this is the attitude of a person of faith. The attitude of the person of faith is in this world, right? This is a temporary world. There is an eternal world. And that we cannot judge, we simply cannot judge what's going on in our lives. We cannot say, oh gee, I look at this person, they have such an easy, wonderful life, right? And say, oh, I wish I had a life like theirs. Don't ever wish that you had a life like anybody else's. You're getting exactly the best for you, right? And a person who's having a wonderful, simple life is looking at another person who's suffering and having a tough life, says, oh gee, I'm glad I'm not them. Maybe you shouldn't be so glad you're not them. Maybe they're getting much more out of their life than you are. And so Shlomo's attitude has always been, do what's right, right? Do what's right. Be wise. And true wisdom has a much more all-encompassing understanding of life rather than focusing on things and seeing things in a very fragmented way. And that's basically his point here. Et hakol ra'iti, I've seen everything, b'yamei havli, in the days of my futility. Okay? Yesh tzadik oved b'tzidko, and these are very strong words. There's a tzadik who perishes in his tzidkut, in his righteousness. V'yesh rasha marich b'ra'ato, and I see an evil person who has a long life for his evilness. And I've seen this, and the first way of understanding this is what we've said, that you see a tzaddik, the good die young. He said, I've seen this, right? I have seen this, and I've seen an evil person have a long and good life, and you can't understand it. He says, al tiyat tzaddik harbeh, but you don't be too much of a tzaddik. Which means, don't you try and exact the justice of God and say, God, is this fair? God is not just. Okay? V'al titchakem yoter. Don't be too wise and try to figure this all out. Lamed tishomem. Why should you bring yourself to destruction? In other words, you're sitting there and you're trying to figure out, says, I've seen it too. You think I understand, how is it, you know? And so it's really upsetting when people take, for instance, the Holocaust and say, well, they died because of these sins. And you say, but there were such incredible righteous people in the Holocaust. There were tzaddikim in the Holocaust, right? And so I just to say I don't understand, right? Be honest, to say I don't understand. Rather than be too much of a chacham. The more you try to explain these things, the less understandable and comprehensible they are. And they say, you know, you have to let go. That's one way of understanding this. There's another way of understanding this. Al tiyat tzadika, I saw a tzadik die in his tzidkut. And this, Rashi applies to Shaul. Shaul was told to kill the Amalekites, and he didn't do it. He just thought, you know, well, I understand killing the men, but I can't kill the children, I can't. And because he was being too righteous, right, he was perished in his righteousness. In other words, the attitude is that there might be things in the Torah that you just don't ethically understand. You know, you just don't ethically understand. But that's the way it is. I don't understand it. You know, I don't understand it. One of the most devastating things is the whole story of Yom Kippur. You know, they're going to take this lamb, and there's two lambs, and there's one lamb that's for Azazel, and they take this goat, and they throw it off a cliff live, and it dies. Nobody in their right mind is going to feel comfortable with this. Nobody in this world will not look at this Torah mitzvah and say, oh, I understand that. That makes a lot of sense. It's going to bother each and every one of us. And yet, I think perhaps that's the story of Yom Kippur, right? That we don't understand the ways of God, right? And that which might look truly ugly in our eyes with our most broadest humanistic perspective on life, who knows if it was really right or wrong? We don't know, and that's why Judaism says all we basically have is Torah. You know, what we have is the mitzvot of Hashem. And
why did God, you know, I understand that God wants that God gave us free choice, but why did He make it so mysterious?
That augments your free choice. The more mysterious it is, the more it is your choice. You have to make a choice, not based on, you know, I figured it out. And that's what he's saying over here. Al tiyat tzaddik ha'obed. Don't be, you know, oh, I'm more righteous than the Torah is. I know better than God. And God, this just doesn't taste good. I don't like that. True, of course. There's no doubt about that. He's saying, al tiyat tzaddik ha'obed. That means you can be a tzaddik. But don't be too much of a tzaddik thinking that you know better than Hashem. Al tichakem yoter. Right? Don't be too wise. He's not saying don't be wise, but there's a point where wisdom and rationale breaks down, and I've got to know that that's the end. That's another way of understanding it. The other way is that people become too much of a righteous person, and they forbid upon themselves that which is even permissible, and that tidchakem is they become much too intellectually, academically involved, and then they become desolate from living and enjoying life in this world. That's another pshat. Al tir shehal beh v'al tiyesachal. And don't be too evil, or don't increase evil. Now, Rashi explains that, meaning that if you do evil, then stop and don't continue to go. But another way of understanding that is, don't view yourself too much as a tzaddik. Don't view yourself too much as a wise person. But also don't view yourself too much as an evil person. Why? Below itcha, because why should you cause yourself to die early? In other words, as he says in the next verse 18, Tov asher, it's best. Asher ta'achos bezeh v'gam mizeh. Have this and that. In other words, a person should not think they're too much of a tzaddik, and a person shouldn't think they're too much of a rasha. In other words, we have to know, hey, you know, I've done bad, and yes, I've done good. And you have to be very careful. Some explain that Elisha ben Abuya, this fellow became his heretic. And the Midrash brings him down as an example of Al Tarsheh Albet. Don't be too evil. Some explain because since Elisha ben Abuya decided I'm evil, right, that he decided he couldn't change. Okay? And a person should never think they're an absolute tzaddik. And a person should never think they're an absolute rasha, an absolute evil person. But you gotta keep in the middle. I'm good sometimes, I'm bad sometimes. And hold on to both sides. Al tanachid yedcha ki yireh Elohim yetzeh kulam. A person who has true reverence of God will be yotzeh. They will fulfill both angles. 19. Hachachma ta'oz lechacham. Chachma will give you power. Ma'asarash litim asher ayu ba'ir. Then 10 rulers over one city. Now some see this as somewhat as a metaphor for the body. You know, that the body has basically 10 rulers. It's got 2 eyes, 2 ears, 2 hands, 2 feet, 1 mouth, and 1 heart. Okay, and these are the rulers. But with all that, wisdom is what really empowers a person. And what will empower a person? Wisdom. And I think, according to Shlomo, the wisdom is this patience, this acknowledging, this accepting, this doing but not too much, this moderation. And I think that's how he sees wisdom. Ki Adam ein tzaddik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov. Because a man, right, ein tzaddik ba'aretz is not, there is no such thing as a person who is righteous that does good and doesn't do sins. And that's very important, that you're human. That a person in the world, it's not, if you're outside the world, then maybe you could be a righteous person. But anybody who lives in this world, right, and really deals with this world, there will be struggles, right? And nobody's perfect. And nobody's perfect. You're human, okay? So if you think you're a tzaddik, okay, then you're not. Because nobody's a perfect tzaddik. And if you think you're a rasha, then the reason why you think you're rasha is you think you're evil because you assume that everybody, you know, that it's possible to be perfect. It's not possible to be perfect. Nobody's asking you to be perfect. Right? So there's no such thing, ki Adam, because a man, a human being, maybe an angel, but a human being ain't tzaddik ba'aretz. There's no such thing in the land to be a tzaddik asher yaseh tov, that will do good, v'lo yechteh, and will not come to doing mistakes also. Okay, and I heard another pshat from a rabbi in New York, Rabbi Schwartz, said a very nice thing. Explaining this pasuk, that there's no such thing, if you're in this world, that a person will do good, and yet even as good as you'll do, there will still be things that will come out of it that are not so good. You know, because there's no such thing in this world that will be a perfect good. You're trying your best. And even when you try your best, there'll be other consequences that come that it wasn't so perfect. People are going to say, why did you do that? It wasn't, you know. But you did your best. Right? Okay. Gam l'kol etzvarim. And also to all the things that she'er yedabru al titein libcha. Don't be too sensitive. Okay? Don't be too sensitive to yourself. Right? Expect too much from yourself. And don't be too sensitive regarding others and what you expect of others. So that you won't end up hearing your own servant curse you. In other words, you're so concerned, what are people saying about me? What are people doing? What are people saying? And so you're going to hear things that it's better you didn't even have to hear it. Okay? Why? Because you know in your heart that you've cursed others too. Okay? So forgive yourself. Forgive others. Know that you're not perfect. You're going through pain. So one way of dealing with the pain is try to deny the pain. Okay? Run away from the pain. Be angry. It's not fair. But then you can go to the other extreme and start thinking, well, I guess it is fair and I must be rotten. I must be terrible. I'm this and that. It's happening because of that, right? And that's the other extreme, how to deal with the pain. Don't run away from it. Right? But then don't be too hasty to decide that, well, then I must be so terrible, you know, it must be, you know, look what I did, I forgot to say a bracha, and this is why it's all happening to me, and there's no such thing as like, no. So on one hand, don't run away from the pain, realize that God's ways are just. The other hand, don't then become crazy and start eating yourself up, I'm wicked, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that, I'm this, right? But know that you too, forgive yourself, as I think one of the real statements he's making here, and also forgive others. Because know that you've also made those mistakes too. And if you can't forgive others, you can't forgive yourself, and generally because you can't forgive yourself is why you can't forgive others. As it says in the Gemara, that we see in others our own problems. Okay? And don't run away from the judgment. But then don't become so neurotic and crazy and just think, you know, and batter yourself. Oh, I deserve it. I must be so terrible. I must be so wicked. I must be this. Don't try to figure it out, you know. Don't try to run away from it. Don't try to figure it out. Just do what you got to do. Verse 23. All this I tried to figure out and I said I will understand it, but it became very far away from me. Okay? This is so far from me and this is so deep for me. So a person's figuring out, why is this happening to me? Either because they're saying it's not fair, or why is this happening to me? It's absolutely fair and I must be terrible and wicked. It must be this or that. I don't understand. Okay? I turn my heart to try and understand, to to probe, to figure it out, to understand evilness and heresy. And I try to understand all this. Umotzi adni ra. And you know what I found the worst thing? I tried to figure all these things out. Okay? Wisdom and folly, and how does a person make mistakes, and how does a person do and guard themselves from mistakes. But there's one thing I found that he says, which is the most frightening. Let's go. Motzei ani mar mi mavet. I found worse, bitter than death. Et aisha, a woman, asher hi mitzudim v'charamim, who is ensnaring and trapping. Now you got to be very careful. He didn't say that women are this way, right? But he found that which causes a person the greatest downfall is a seductive woman who appeals to man's passions, okay, and ensnares him. He's not saying that all women are like this, okay, but he's saying this is the worst thing that you could ever find yourself in, okay, the greatest downfall is to find yourself in front of a seductive, ensnaring type of woman. Okay, verse 27, listen, I found it, I tried to add it up one by one. Asher od biksha nafshi v'lo matzati adam echad me'elef matzati v'isha b'cholelu lo matzati. He said, you know, I looked around and I tried to find one guy out of 1,000 who had it, who was a tzaddik, who was good, right? And I tried to find, and I didn't find even one woman out of 1,000. Now, again, is Shlomo making a statement about all women? I think he's talking about his own experience. That's all we can say. He's talking about his own experience. In his own experience, he found maybe one guy out of 1,000, right? And he felt he didn't even find one woman out of 1,000. And maybe what he's referring to is, I didn't find one guy out of 1,000 which was really a tzaddik who never sinned, right? Or who was this total perfect. Maybe that's what he's referring to. But this is what he ends up with. Levad reizim matzati asher asai Elohim. But this is all I found. I have found that God made a human being straight, and they ask for complexities. And some understand, what does it mean, straight? Okay? Moderate. Not to the left, not to the right, not to extremes. We have created the extremities. All we have to do with life situations is never go to extremes. Okay? I'm going through pain. Don't try to run away from it. On the other hand, don't try and think I understand it. You know, don't say it's not fair, and then don't say, oh, it's absolutely fair, it must be because of this, that, the other. Just let it work. Work through it. Okay? Don't be too wise, but then be wise. Don't be too tzaddik, but be tzaddik. And God made a person straight. God made a person moderate. But we've asked for all these accountings, try to figure everything out. And because we try to figure things out, we either run away from them or we come to the wrong conclusions. And I think this is Shlomo's advice to us, how to deal with pain.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.